budget will come to order. We've got three agenda items today. Let's start with an update on cash flow. Welcome, gentlemen. Morning.
2 weeks, don't worry about me.
Mr. Chairman, well, thank you. To my right is Jim Showalter. He will be talking about the update on our cash flow situation. To my left is our Assistant Commissioner for Treasury and Debt Management, Kathy Cardell. She will be talking about our options should we need to borrow in a short term. In essence, the short story of what we're going to tell you this morning, we're still working on, usually takes a couple of weeks after the forecast, Mr. Chairman, to do a month-by-month, week-by-week, day-by-day cash flow. And we're still working on that. We don't have that ready for today, but Mr. Showalter has some information for you. And then Ms. Cardell will talk a little bit more about the options. It's still, even with that information, will depend on what our revenues are in actual collections are in the months to come. And if you recall from the forecast a week or so ago, most of our revenue loss was in the second year of the biennium. And then we've had some brief conversations with Mr. Watson beforehand about some concerns you might have about whether we can short-term borrow while there's a unbalanced budget, and we'll talk a little bit about that today as well. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Showalter.
Morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, members.
Ms. Cardell, good morning. Morning.
For the record.
She purposely didn't wear red today.
I did. I want you to know.
She wore green for you, Mr.
Chairman. That I wore green today. Sensitive to that. Less discussion.
For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, State Budget Director. I'm going to just provide a little bit of background on cash flow management. Really an abbreviated version of the presentation that we delivered to this committee about a month ago. We've got a little bit more information since we've had the forecast. I'll provide that to you as well and just walk you through any further questions or other questions that you might want to go through. As we all know, cash management has been something that has been done at the department for years, but it hasn't been really a topic, and so I just would welcome any further clarification questions as we try to all get a common knowledge and understanding of this issue. First of all, this cash management is really just a matching of the daily revenues and daily spendings. It's not the same as a budget. When you can have a balanced budget, but that does not mean that your revenues are coming in the same day as your spending is going out. So if your spending goes out before your revenues, you have a cash management deficit. If you have your revenues come in first, then you have no problems, and you would have you'd be going through the year just fine. There are some normal cycles that we tend to see. By law, as you know, aid payments go through a couple of different payment cycles. Those are early in the first half of the fiscal year. School aid payments go out in a predefined process throughout the 12 months. Those tend to be somewhat front-loaded. Health and Human Services payments go pretty routinely, evenly out through the course of the year, but our revenues don't match that. They tend to be backloaded with income taxes and things like that coming in later in spring. Cash balances have slowly dropped over the last several years. The effect of the economy, our budget solutions, all combining to slowly draw down our combined cash balance in what we know as the statutory general fund. That's not just the general fund. That includes some of the non-constitutionally dedicated funds, like the Special Revenue Fund, the Health Impact Fund, Health Care Access Fund, things that have general governmental purposes and aren't specifically designated or separated away. Those funds over the years have been spent down. The reserves have been used up. The budget reserve in general fund, for instance, is at zero. And then also sometimes some of the budget solutions for the general fund have used balances from other funds and transferred those into the general fund. That also has no net impact on our cash balance. In fact, doesn't help that. So over the last several years, our cash balance has slowly drawn down. Now, as the economy continues to slow our revenues, we're seeing low points that we haven't really realized in quite a few years. Budget changes that we may make in this upcoming session will not likely translate into immediate cash balances. If you think about the impact of a spending cut or a revenue increase, think about the timing of those actions. Let's say a spending cut would likely go out and reduce the payments over the course of a year. It doesn't all happen as of day one. As a result, if you have a low point in the next month, you only would realize some small portion of the savings from those budget changes. As a result, you know, we're looking at fiscal years 10, but also trying to think of going forward as we go into this next session, what are the issues for fiscal 11, and start to try and define those as well. We did provide some comprehensive materials to the LCPFP subcommittee last month. I'm just going to give you a couple of snapshots now to update you on a few bits of information that we have that we didn't have then.
So just you said that when you said that budget actions of upcoming session will not fundamentally affect cash flow, you meant just for 10 or you meant 10 and 11?
Mr. Chair, it depends on what cash flow and what sort of low points you're trying to manage through. So, for instance, if you wanted to make for fiscal 10 changes in this upcoming legislative session, that would have some impact depending on what changes are made and, you know, whether they occur in the first couple months when we have low points, which are really March, April, and May, or whether they happen later in the period, where you might be in May and June, and you don't actually get that impact in fiscal 10. So it really just depends on the action. But I just wanted to introduce the notion that usually our payments go, you know, in a multiple series of payments. So it's not like a $100 million cut or $100 million revenue all comes in at once. So it doesn't affect your low point so directly.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up using two examples. One, the first example would be the how we pay aids and credits in LGA in the tax area. Had we, you know, had the governor chosen to unallot the December payment, we would have immediately reduced our outgoing expenditures by $400 million. That would have had an immediate impact because it's a large payment. A second example that would be, or if we had called a special session, you know, somehow by law, if that had not gone forward, that would have had an immediate $400+ million impact on our cash flow. But, you know, then take, you know, the second example would be for school aid payments, you know, if you decide, or something that's metered out month by month, if you, you know, if you cut it over a, you know, $100 million over 10 or 12 months, it's only going to come a little bit each month. So the two different examples. I mean, it's the topic of when, not just the amount, that's new for all of us in this process.
Mr. Chair, continuing on to the next page, you'll see the top graph is just something that you had asked for at the earlier presentation, which was the just an example of how the cash balances change by day. I talk quite frequently about daily cash balances, and it seems like that shouldn't be all that volatile, but it really is. And this just gives you a view of the daily cash balances during the month of August. And you'll see that, you know, some days your revenues ran well below the expenses, which is the second bar. There about the 12th, you see expenses were substantial, over $450 million, yet your revenues were pretty small. Over the course of the month.
So this is not in color. So that Wednesday, is that tall?
Yep.
That's expenses?
Yep.
Okay. I just couldn't, I can't tell the difference
between
the two.
Yeah, I realize it's the 2-to-1.
To the right.
It's a little small.
The
notion here is just that on a daily basis, it can vary quite quickly and quite radically. When I was testifying, we were all testifying to the House right after the forecast, and noted just that day was one of the low points for our cash balances, and just with, you know, between a couple of hours, I had checked what our cash balance was in the general fund. It was around $40 million. Later in the day, it had jumped to more than $300 million. That kind of changes just give you some sensitivity to the hundreds of thousands of transactions that go on in the general fund on any given week, and that all cumulatively impacts the cash balance that you see here. An additional piece of paper that perhaps is more to scale is also in your packet. And this is something Mr. Bielek put together that just shows you the actual estimated revenues based upon the end of session forecast. So this isn't updated. This is not an updated cash flow, but just gives you a notion, again, of the daily cash and in,
which
out.
Chart are you looking at right now?
Sorry, it's a singular sheet.
Okay, thank you.
With
thank
lots
you.
Of, just a simple spreadsheet that looks on the daily basis through a good portion of November and through the month of December. And you'll see there on the right-hand column, the cash balance, starting at $240 million, goes up for a few weeks until it suddenly starts to drop down late in November. You see there the impact of our debt service transfer of $430 million, dropping our cash balance down to $43 million. That is very much the low point for November.
It
was also the low point for December, at which point it starts to jump back up. We started to get in revenues from the Department of Revenue, and that then persists over the course of that month. Counting against that, of course, on the spending side, you'll see some of the local aids payments, you'll see some education payments, and things like that that are going on that start to draw that down. But we're back at a more comfortable level with a general fund balance, not a statutory general fund, but a general fund balance in the varying between $200 and $500 million.
So 1222 is a local aid payment?
That would be correct.
Does that go out in two chunks?
That must. Mr. Chairman, yes.
What's the other one?
Assume it's market value credits, but we can.
Mr. Chairman, Charlie Bielek, MMB. Yes, that's a combination of LGA payments and other payments to counties. Normally that's scheduled for December 26th. However, December 26th is a weekend this year, and so it's being scheduled to go out on the 22nd and 23rd.
22nd and 23rd?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
So, again, you just see some of the daily implications for the assumptions of when transactions happen, when revenues come in, and how that really closely affects our cash balance. So as managers, we're trying to make sure that we've got adequate cash balances, adequate understanding of what's going to happen before it happens, because clearly these numbers can swing quite quickly. Our intent is to make sure that the operations of state government continue without effect, and that is then part of the challenge of cash management.
Is the 28th a school aid payment then?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Mr. Chairman, if I can just highlight two other things. If you're looking at the chart and you're looking at December 2nd and 3rd, that significant increase in revenues, it reflects the statewide property tax that was due on December 3rd. The combination of that $279 million and a day later, a good portion of that $181 million is the statewide property tax. I think it's also interesting to note that as we had larger balances, that on December 7th, you see a negative transfer out there. That $75 million reflects a repayment of part of the money that we had been borrowing from Minsky. You recall that we had told you previously that we had borrowed a total of $330 million from Minsky. We work with Minsky to monitor their cash balances, and when they fall below $200 million, we transfer money back to them. That reflects a partial repayment of some of the cash that we had borrowed from Minsky.
When will that all be repaid?
Mr. Chairman, members, it is our intent and our agreement with Minsky is basically to continue to use their available cash probably through the end or close to the end of the fiscal year. I think as Mr. Showalter has mentioned, by the time we get to February, March, and April, we're looking at additional cash potential shortages. And we would only repay to Minsku what is needed to maintain their minimum of $200 million cash balance.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
You used the number $330 million, and I think when we last met, I recall it was $300 million and then $30 million in interest. And I thought that $30 million was from all the pots. So now did you withhold $330 million? And does that include the interest that one of you is either the commissioner or Mr. Showalter, somebody indicated, because I asked about the interest earnings and what was going to happen there, and you indicated that you would be paying the interest earnings as well. So I'm trying to see if that's in the 330 or not.
Mr. Chairman, members, the $330 million is the cash that we borrowed. That does not include interest. Interest continues to be paid to Minsku's 105 fund on a monthly basis as part of the monthly allocation. So, no, it does not include interest, but interest continues to accrue to the Minsku funds as though that cash were there.
Okay, so they are being paid the interest monthly. Okay, thank you.
And the 1221 revenue and the 1230 revenue, what are those?
Mr. Chairman, 1221, well, the largest portion of that, of course, there are a mixture of items that come in, but the largest portion of that is the sales tax revenues. On 1230, a significant portion of that money, in excess of $100 million, is the annual tobacco settlement payment that we get.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, just one other item that you may want to note. This chart does include some of the assumed refunds that were being held back previously. As we testified last month, some corporate refunds were being held. We have started to, the Department of Revenue has already started to pay some of those back as of December 3rd and 4th. We anticipate more, if not all of those, to be dealt with later this month after the systems conversion as our cash balances start to recover.
So, Mr. Chairman, how late are those payments then that are being made? When would they have normally been made, and how many days is the business community losing that refund?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a good question. I can get some statistics on it. I know that in no instance are they holding things beyond the 90 days, which is essentially the timeline that they've been allowed to for processing and refunding those cash, those payments. In some instances, they were actually being prepared a little faster than usual because of systems conversion that they were doing, which would have only worsened our cash balance.
Yeah, so I'm just, are you going up? Well, if you don't know the answer, I guess you can find out for us. If they are going up to the 90 days, or if normally they were 30 and now they're 60, be interesting to know just how late we are, even though you're within the law.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative, we'll find that out for you. Continuing on then, the next slide, I think we just sort of touched on it with discussion of Minsku balances and when that would be repaid. You see here in the bottom slide, the statutory general fund before the November forecast. This is still end of session numbers, not including any changes that were included in this last forecast, but you see that the statutory general fund had really two low points. That November-December low point that we anticipated and you just looked at in detail, and then another low point that's going to occur at a similar, if not even a little lower level, coming up in March and April and May. During those 3 months, you're going to see, again, a net cash outflow because our payments have gone out. We'll be paying out some refunds. Some of the net tax revenues will not have been collected yet or received. And so not until June does that cash balance start to go back up. At that point, you'll see the cash balance swing quite significantly up to about a $2 billion level. At that point, that is really the statutory general fund, and all of the general fund obligations to other funds would have been paid back as that balance starts to recover, because the general fund balance is also recovering on that same timeline. The impact of the forecast on cash balances, actuals have run fairly close to our anticipated projections. Pleased to note that at least we sort of knew the general shape and days that we had to really manage to and that we also had some inkling of where the forecast was going to go. We did see our cash balances running a little lower than projections, and that was confirmed in the revenue projections that we received on December 2nd. Most of those revenue impacts are in 2011. So you're not going to see significant changes in fiscal 10. We're not anticipating that, at least. But for fiscal 11, by the end of fiscal 11, you should anticipate that basically $1.2 billion cumulatively will be rolled up and be lost from our current year current cash projections. That being said, and Mr. Buehler can get into this as well, is that even if that goes down, the total balance as of June 30th, 2010, goes down, or June 30, 2011, goes down $1.2 billion. That doesn't mean all the low points, the monthly low points, will go down by $1.2 billion. Again, remember, you divide them up over the course of this period, so it's not like all of those low points also shift down by that amount. Mm-hmm. We're preparing a cash flow report, working through the details on, again, estimated daily balances over the course of the rest of the biennium, and hope to have that for you shortly, and we'll certainly share it with you as soon as we have it. Just a little bit more supplemental information on the bottom of the page. You'll see the ending month-ending balance for the first several months of the year. The left-hand bar, the dark bar, shows the end-of-session estimate. The lighter bar, shows the actual ending balance in the months through November, tracking quite closely, though slightly lower than previously anticipated. No other questions. I just go to the last slide in this introduction, and that is just again to remind you the November 2009 low point was really driven by that debt service payment transfer. We moved about $430 million out of the general fund into a dedicated account for payments of debt and debt instruments. That is outside the statutory general fund. That draws down our statutory general fund cash balances. Even though it was in the state's pocket, it was in a pocket that we couldn't access and use for cash management purposes. We did do some temporary delays to corporate and sales tax refunds. About $445 to $150 million of payments were impacted. As we talked before, are trying to get those out before any interest is accrued. In March, and that's sort of the looking forward piece, there's some options that we should all look at. One is, again, reinstating some kind of delay or management schedule for those kinds of large refunds to corporations. Are there other types of payment refunds? Refunds, payments that we should be looking at administratively trying to make and manage so that we can manage through that low point. And in addition to that, is it necessary to look for a backstop if revenues come in shorter, if our management tools aren't or if we simply want to make sure we aren't interested in using those other tools to have some kind of line of credit or some kind of other external borrowing in place. That is essentially the topic that Ms. Assistant Commissioner Cardell will go into, but if there's any other questions on this part, I'd be happy to take them.
Senator Metzen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the additional administrative payment delays, What examples could you give us? Would that be like schools or LGA or on your low points bulletin here?
Mr. Chair, Senator, a good question, and the vagueness is in part because we're still determining that. I think there's a variety of options that we will be putting together, and Mr. Bielek's leading an interagency group looking at cash flow management options. It's a statutory required report that will be ready around January 15th. So included in that, I would expect, we're going to end up looking at whether we can delay local aid payments. Certainly school aid payments, there's some flexibility that in statute currently. Other HMO payments through DHS, uncertain whether that's feasible because there are significant Recovery Act requirements on prompt payment that are still in place. Other kinds of payments, we just need to explore and get down into the details because this really is a daily balance. Can you move it at 2 weeks? Does that help your low point significantly or not? How long do you have to manage these payments? We've had discussions with higher education institutions and have actually just between ourselves, made some slightly later than expected or normal payments to the U of M, and that helps our low point even already. That's already included in some of these numbers. Can we find other places that would significantly improve it? We're looking.
Chair, we do have, I believe, prompt payment legislation on the books, don't we, in Minnesota? So how long does that give you to delay?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the prompt payment legislation is 30 days, and that is payments to vendors. And so, again, it is within that window. Is that any kind of flexibility or not? We're not really some other states have even gone into that territory. That's not something that I'm suggesting that we really are investigating.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask for examples here as well, but I also had a question on the line of credit or borrowing options. You presented, if I recall correctly, three of them to us at the last time we met. And have you refined that at all in terms of what tools you may or may not use?
Ms. Cardo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, there are four options technically, but one of them is either negotiated or competitively sold. So we have, we've drafted a request for proposals for a line of credit from a bank and or a private placement of certificates. We can't do anything in terms of releasing that because we still have to come before the Legislative Advisory Commission to get an advisory recommendation. And we still don't have the cash. We need the cash flow projections, too, before we can go forward. But those are the two options that we are focusing on. We would expect that there will be financial institutions that would provide proposals for both of those, some that may only be interested in one versus the other. We won't know that, of course. But we would anticipate, at a minimum, taking proposals on those two options, probably in January.
you'd be going to, Mr. Chairman, the LAC sometime prior to doing that, so probably early January is when you'd make that presentation?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think early January after the Christmas break is probably when we would convene or suggest we convene an LAC. And I think what we're going to we'll have the RFPs more refined at that point, but we still get them. I mean, it's really just drafting, working with the Attorney General, getting it in place, but then not implement them until we actually need them, and then be back in touch.
If I recall, that was March that when you testified before you thought you.
So it's just teeing it up, making sure we have discussions here, other hearings you may want to have, certainly the LAC, so we have all our I's crossed and our I's dotted, our T's crossed. Learn how to spell.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, if I could just add, it's my objective that assuming that we have proposals, we take them in January, that we would have something in place in February prior to the anticipated difficulties, again, that the cash flows are showing for March and April.
So based on what you know today, we're going to do some are we probably going to do some short-term borrowing in March and April?
Mr. Chairman, if I knew, I would tell you. I don't know. I think it's based on – we still need the report that Jim talked about. Probably more likely in 2011 at this point, depending on how the revenues come in. I just don't know. I mean, it would make this process a lot easier. And as Kathy said, they're the two different mechanisms we're talking about. The line of credit can blink on or off in a day's time, so you really don't need, you know, you really can look on a Thursday and blink it on a Friday. I mean, literally a lot quicker. The selling the certificates is a mechanism that takes a couple of weeks to do. So we're looking at two different mechanisms, and it'll all depend on how fast the money, you know, how the money comes in and how our projections are. I mean, so that's why we're looking at two.
And again, if I might just add, Mr. Chairman, those two options were really selected for consideration primarily because they really are the two that have the most flexibility potentially.
Sir Metzen.
Yeah, you mentioned four options. You know, only listed two, but that's all right.
And Senator Metzen, I'm not sure if you were at that last hearing where we went over the different options, but there are four.
All right, you don't have to go back through those. But when's the last time, I think you might have mentioned this at the last meeting, too, we borrowed money?
The 1984.
That's been quite a while.
Indeed.
25 years ago, what's that? What was my math? What a long time
ago.
That's right. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Cardell, when we borrow money, what does that do with our overall Moody's and other ratings from the systems out there? I mean, they look and they say, well, the state of Minnesota needs dough just to run its business. Does that affect our bond rating?
It certainly, Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzen, it certainly might.
Yeah, so it's not
liquidity for all governmental entities, whether they're states, cities, counties, schools, are being looked at very closely by the rating agencies. Certainly we have not borrowed, as you pointed out, for a very long time. And if we do need to do that, I cannot foresee their actions, but they may very well take an adverse one or more of the rating agencies.
But the net effect, Mr. Chairman, members, could cost the state an additional millions of dollars on interest.
Certainly on in our future long-term debt, indeed.
Yeah. I guess I know the answer, but I thought I'd ask the question.
Well, just to elaborate, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, we are operating under the assumption, you know, that if we talk about it ahead of time, plan for it, and then if we short-term borrow in short bursts, it's better than just springing it on everybody and the ratings agencies at the last minute. So we're trying to do what we can to mitigate whatever downfall there is.
Under either option, line of credit or the certificate, are they both something you run by the LAC?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Any before any borrowing, whatever form it takes, it has to go for an advisory recommendation from the LAC or the Executive Council. That's the other. There's two options identified in statute.
Which option are you going to?
In Galaxy.
Commissioner, which one do you use?
I will let you know closer to the time. I don't know at this point. I haven't even seen. Kathy is still working on the RFPs. But I will have a recommendation for you. And I think it should be the. I can talk to your staff afterwards, but whenever it's convenient. For you and the members of the LAC sometime that first week or two of that we're after the new year.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Carlson?
A quick one with the two options, and I know you testified that with the line of credit you had more flexibility than you did with certificates. Is there a difference in the interest rate? Is one cheaper than the other?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, the absolute interest rate on a private placement of certificates would probably be lower. The difference is that the certificates would have to be issued in a maximum amount, and we would begin paying interest immediately on that full amount. The line of credit, you would set it for a maximum amount, but you would only pay interest on what amounts you actually draw. So I think whether or not it's less, you know, you end up paying more or less interest cost, I think. I'm not sure it matters so much what the interest rate is as opposed to, you know, what is our best strategy in trying to manage this.
Mr. Chairman, maybe in preparation for a future meeting before this group or the LAC, you could show us what the cost difference is with the different approaches, maybe not just the interest rate then, but what the total cost of issuing the certificates might be, beginning to pay interest then right away versus a line of credit, just so we know what we're buying into. Mr. Chairman, I did have another question, but it wasn't on this. In passing, and I forget which one of you, you mentioned delayed payment, if I recall, to the U of M. Mm-hmm. What is that the same situation that Minsky was in then, or where he would be delaying a payment to the U of M, and you haven't done that yet, but are you planning on doing it?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what I was referring to is the appropriations that go from the general fund to the University of Minnesota. That's outside the statutory general fund. They have their own set of accounts, and so when we make that payment, it moves outside of the statutory general fund. That's different than Minsky. So when we make those payments, Charlie, I'm sure, can give us the exact dates, but normally we would make them about mid-month through a sort of common agreement. We're delaying that by about a week. That helps us pass some of our low points in the middle of your average month. That really does inform their cash balances and just helps, again, on a cash management purpose. It isn't a delay or change in the total amounts they receive or anything like that.
So with your December payments here, Mr. Chairman, which one would that be when you say mid-month? You've got several that I would define as mid-month.
Mr. Chairman, members, there are two payments that we make for higher education. Our payments to the University of Minnesota by statute, both of them, to Minsky and University of Minnesota, are to be made by the 15th of the month. We have agreed with the University of Minnesota, with their agreement, we delay their payment to the 26th of the month. They're working with us because they recognize our cash flow difficulties. We continue to make their regular monthly payments. However, rather than the 15th, we make them on the 26th. Minsky is just a little bit different in that we continue to make their payment on the 15th because we are, in effect, borrowing money to and from their funds. So we make their payment, and if you look on the schedule that I had shown you before, if you look at, for example, December 14th, $55 million, that is the Minsky payment. So we continue to make their payments as scheduled, but we are also continuing to borrow money between the two funds.
And I assume, being that the university agreed, that doesn't create a negative impact relative to their cash flow, and the same was true with Minsky?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, both the university and Minsky have agreed to work with us to manage this cash appropriately. So,
can you get us a list of all the administrative payment delay potentials? Get it to us. We'd appreciate that. Because I assume potentially we would need some big ticket items there.
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming we would too. Would actually just encourage if the legislative staff have additional ideas, because it really is sort of an exploration of thinking about how to manage and to make these timings somewhat different.
Okay. Chairman.
Sir, Benson.
Yeah, just a comment on Representative Carlson's point there. You might pay a little more on the line of credit, and you take out a line of credit, for example, for $500 million, but you and on the private placement, you get the whole $500 million. So you're paying a little less interest, obviously. So if you only need $150 or $250 million on the line of credit, that's, of course, what you're going to take out. So I imagine your numbers, I can't prove it now, but be kind of about the same on the interest, because you're paying, hopefully, at a lesser amount on the line of credit.
Sounds like you work in a bank. Sounds like you work in a bank.
I do a little of this.
Yeah. I know you do.
we've looked at the statute, and I think as long as it is an LAC,
certificate, so
you wouldn't go to the executive council. It just says that if you're not an LAC, it would go to the executive council. So
let's say that. What? It's the LAC.
It's LAC.
Yeah.
As long as an LAC exists.
Yes.
You go to the LAC.
Yes.
That's thanks for okay. The discussion on that. You know, I want to move the supplementary budget request first, Mr. Hansen, just move that item on the agenda before we get our staff up. Senators Cohen and Solberg sent a letter to the governor, and to you, I believe, no, to the governor, asking when the governor's recommendation will be here for the budget. And the governor's letter back says, do you have copies? You've seen these, I take it.
I've seen them. I don't have copies.
Why don't we get you a copy? Governor's letter back says, my administration is developing a range of options to address the estimated 1.2. And then a couple specifics. We're not going to cut protecting veterans, military, and public safety, core public safety, but reductions in other areas of spending. I think it would help if we had something by the end of the year, recommendations from the governors, or committees could, the finance committees at least, could work in January. So would you be able to get us something in writing by the end of the year so we knew what some of the options were? Or what the, I guess what we really want is a recommendation from the governor. We all know what the options are. We need to have a recommendation.
Unless he doesn't want to work with us.
So that we can work together. But I think it would help if...
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to give you a few more details. We had some supplemental budget instructions that went out that you have prior to the forecast. Our more detailed budget instructions will go out to agencies in the next day or so. We just have to look at them one more time. We'll make that available to you as well. We will have recommendations, timing. Certainly, we want, the sooner we get it to you, the sooner we get going, the sooner we move forward, the sooner we get the session going. Right now, we are working in the next 10 days with the governor. We're working on our bonding recommendations, which are due to you middle of January. So we're actually in the next week or so finalizing our trying to get some of our major decisions on the bonding bill out of the way as well. So you'll have our instructions. It is our intent to have recommendations to you, and timing's a little up in the air. But the sooner we move forward on this, the better off I think we all are.
So there'll be a supplemental budget document. What do you think? Can you be a little more specific? Because we've directed our finance committees to get to work. And it certainly would be helpful if the governor had a supplemental budget.
Yeah, if I had a time frame, I would say I generally like to move this type of thing forward.
So there'll be a document?
We will have, we have recommendations. It'll be the typical supplemental budget that we've done, you know, where you have items listed and specifics and the whole works.
And it'll resolve the $1.2 billion with cuts, I take it?
Yes.
Yes.
It'll be the same process, Mr. Chairman, that we did in every other supplemental, you know, where we communicate with you and we, you know, by communication we'll follow up with probably, in this case, one bill or whatever. However we decide.
You provide a bill also?
Yes.
A bill also, good.
Yes.
Any chance to get that to us by the end of the year?
Timing-wise, it'd be a little tough, but I note your desire to get moving, and it's to our benefit to move quickly as well.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that you've clarified it, because the letter we received from the governor, I didn't interpret as being as clear as what you've articulated then, that we will, in fact, have specific budget recommendations as well as legislation, because that's what we were requesting in our initial letter. And the timing, however, is vitally important. I know on the House side we've already had a meeting right after the forecast came out, because many of the division chairs were in town and have made requests of them to begin to review the budgets to see where there's potential savings. But we do need those recommendations from the governor so that they can be part of that overall process, as the chair has just pointed out. So okay. The end of the year would be great. we put in the letter as soon as possible, but we weren't thinking of February. We were thinking of late this month or early January. So I would hope you can respond in a timely manner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think the purpose of the governor's letter was to also communicate that you're welcome to give us proposals at the same time we provide you, and that it doesn't need to be just waiting on the governor to provide his recommendations. That, I mean, that was one aspect. And then the other is that we, you know, as we prepare our recommendations, that we work and get ideas from you. So it was meant to be a ongoing dialogue, but nothing prevents you from coming out with your recommendations before us. I know it's difficult.
Mr. Chairman, you have resources that we don't typically have, and that's why it's vitally important that we get the recommendations early and rather specific from the governor. That's, we're going to do what we can do, but we need the resources that you have available to put that together with the governor's recommendations.
We generally don't like what we do anyway, so.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Perhaps one thing you could do is get, would you have targets for the various budget areas beforehand that the governor's trying to hit? We're trying to, we need to get our finance committees working.
Sure.
And I think it would help to the extent that they have, they always say we're waiting for the governor's recommendations.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
It would help if more information we had on decisions the governor has made in terms of his recommendations to get that to our finance committees quicker so we could...
I get that, yeah.
I think it'd be easier for the legislative leadership to move the ball quicker the governor's moves.
Right, because we generally, yeah. And it's, as you said, Mr. Chairman, a minute or so ago, it's no secret. I mean, 85% of what we spend is the education systems, health and human services, and then to a lesser extent, aids and credits. And you look even in the cash flow discussion and you break it down month by month, I mean, that's where our money goes. You can cut a ton out of a smaller agency. You can cut it by half, and it's still not going to equal a reduction in a big area. And that's how I generally look at it.
Will there be any major initiatives in terms of reforming government delivery of services or anything? I just noticed in the last week there's a lot of interest in the media that there's some reinvention. And I'm wondering if the executive branch is going to come with some things there, maybe.
That could be. I don't have every initiative off the top of my head.
Pardon me?
I don't know everything off the top of my head that's percolating. You know, generally, if it costs money, it comes my way or saves money.
Well, again, the sooner we would like very badly to have our committees working, and I think kind of the way the place works is that it's hard for them to proceed until they get a governor's recommendation, for better or for worse. That's kind of the way it works.
Okay.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just a little sidebar comment. We chair the Economic Development Labor Committee.
Talks about streamlining government and mandates and
this and that. And so I've called out to just about everybody I can think of, Chamber of Commerce's Hickey with the small business, whatever he is, and
whatever he does.
Anybody I can think of, they've all gotten a call and a letter a couple of times in the last 4 years. Come on in. How can we reform government? I mean, all that's the buzz. And mandate. So, you know, the olive branch has been out there for 3 years, and nobody's ever come in to testify or come into my room and, you know, tell me. So if your administration can help me along those lines, we'd be willing to hold hearings and do that kind of stuff. But I don't personally have a crystal ball, but everybody, you read about it in the last Minneapolis paper a couple weeks ago. It's Senator Pogermiller. And, you know, change, but okay. Tell us, help us, okay? So if you can get out some, can help us in that area, I'd appreciate it too.
Okay, Commissioner, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Look forward to those documents as quickly as possible, and the bill as quickly as possible. We would hold hearing on those budget bills in January if the governor would provide them.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mr. Showalter. Thank you, Ms. Cardell. Let's go to the final item on the agenda, though, now, which was number two before. Scenarios. Staff has souped up the...
Thank you.
Model calculator, and built in now the numbers from the budget forecast. And there's a 4 or 5 page handout here. Subcommittee on Balanced Budget model examples, Monday, December 14th. That's what we'll be looking at now. Gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, Matt Mossman, Senate Fiscal Staff. Jumping, just to be clear, of course, moving now to discussion rather than of cash flow per se to budget balance, and using the model, as we've talked about in past subcommittee meetings, to look at various ways, really within the context of the new forecast and the projected deficit for fiscal 10-11, as well as the structural balance, to see what reductions in the budget would be needed to achieve a balanced budget. And just to reinforce that, of course, the last couple times we had met, for fiscal 10 and 11, all of the scenarios had assumed that the budget was in balance for fiscal 10 and 11. And with the November forecast, of course, now we have an additional projected shortfall of $1.2 billion for the current biennium, as well as some additional shortfall for fiscal 12 and 13. So there, you requested a couple of examples, and what you have here is a packet of information, the cover page of which just summarizes the output, and then following that is just a hard copy of the examples themselves so that you can see what the implications are for individual budget areas. The first example, then, the first set of bullet points here on the front page, just to walk through what the request was. The example here was to try and identify what percent reduction would be needed in fiscal 10 and 11, as well as fiscal 12 and 13, if permanent reductions were made in spending, 100% of the reductions were permanent reductions in spending to balance the budget, what would those reductions be? And summarize then in the bullet points there. And in this example, I should point out that we looked only at fiscal 2011 spending for the current biennium, not knowing exactly the timing of when things could be put in place. Potentially, you could also get some reductions in fiscal 10. But assuming they're all in fiscal 2011, you would need permanent reductions of 7.6% in the fiscal 2011 budget in order to accommodate and resolve the $1.2 billion shortfall for the biennium. This alone, if you carried those permanent changes forward, then would reduce the fiscal 12 and 13 structural deficit from $5.4 billion to $3 billion. By carrying those reductions forward of 7.6%. In addition to that, then in fiscal 12 and 13, you would need additional spending reductions of 8.9% to the remaining fiscal 12 and 13 budget in order to eliminate the structural imbalance for fiscal 12 and 13. So cumulatively, you would have in effect about a 15% reduction, permanent reduction. If you think of the programs that are supported by the general fund, you'd have a 15% reduction to the spending pattern. Just to flip then to the second physical page, it's actually probably page 3 in your packets, and it's labeled up in the upper right-hand corner the 100% example. This just shows in the middle of the page then In the middle of the page, you can see the proportionate reductions. And if I didn't say so, just to be clear, that this is just computed on a proportionate reduction, 7.6% in fiscal 11 and an additional 8.9% in fiscal 12 and 13. So you see those amounts on line 30 there. And then on lines 33 through 46 in the middle of the page, if you move along to your choices, in the middle of the page, your choices effective fiscal 11, in the spending change column, you can see what the reductions would be for the various budget areas to achieve the $1.2 billion. You'd have about $475 million from K-12 education, $108 million from higher education, $369 from health and human services, and so on and so forth down the middle of the page. Now, an important thing to point out here is we're oversimplifying the situation in a number of respects, no doubt, but to point out the key ones are the federal maintenance of effort limits in a variety of these budget areas, particularly K-12, higher education. We know for certain higher education you're probably only able to make reductions in the neighborhood of about $46 million there. So clearly this $108 million that's in this example could not occur in fiscal 2011 in higher education.
How about K-12?
Mr. Chair, we're in the process of making sure we're on the same page with the executive branch on this, but the legislative staff thinks that there's about a little over $600 million in entitlement reduction that could be made in K-12 education. And the maintenance of effort, of course, covers those things that are in, not the entire budget area, most of the budget area, but not the entire budget area is necessarily in that calculation, but all of the general education aid and special education is in that maintenance of effort limit, the way that the state of Minnesota has proceeded with the federal government.
So theoretically, you can hit the 474?
Theoretically, Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. How about human services? Can you hit 369?
Mr. Chair, human services is a bit more complicated in this regard. There are significant maintenance of effort limitations in that budget area related to health care, which, of course, is the largest part of the Health and Human Services budget. The question is the current extension of federal medical assistance goes through January 1st of 2011. So potentially you could make changes to eligibility of health care programs in the general fund after January 1st of 2011. The other distinction is one between benefit levels and eligibility levels, and in terms of what the federal law actually limits us to doing in those areas. So there's not a crisp number there. I don't think that we could.
Okay, Senator Metzen.
A couple of areas here that not a lot. Well, it is a lot of money. The governor is kind of said we can't touch it, that'd be veterans and public safety. Is that the broad public safety? Is that's number 44 on your thing? Well, that'd be about $80 million that, according to at least his option.
Core, he uses the word
core. I see the word core, and I'm not sure what that means, but if that $80 million would just compound a little bit more every other area, so it's
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, that's true of all of these. That's exactly right. You know, these are just figured on across the board reductions, and the budget areas here, of course, the House and the Senate don't have the same budget jurisdictions. These jurisdictions here just reflect the conference committee jurisdictions as of the last session. So public safety here includes the Department of Corrections, public safety, the courts, and some smaller agencies.
But just, Mr. Chairman, I'm just noting that the increased percentage change, it would go up just a little bit in every other area. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, that's correct.
Could you then technically just remind us why on the percent change column those numbers don't all read 7.6%.
Sure. Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, the percent change column there is set up in this model to be a running percent change of what the change in the that budget area then would be if you go back to the February 2009 forecast before you set the budget. So in February 2009, you had a spending base, a forecasted spending base for each of the budget areas, and then, of course, you had a $4.6 billion deficit, and there was a budget that was put in place, and so there were reductions in that. And then these reductions are in here, and this assumed to be on top of that. So that in K-12, and this includes then the enacted budget and the governor's unallotments, and would include the 7.6% across the board here. So walking through those percent reductions then, for example, in K-12, you would have the changes that were made in the legislative session, which was essentially the $500 million that was backfilled with federal stimulus money, but it was a general fund reduction. Then you would have the governor's unallotments that were made following session, and then in addition to that, you would have the $475 million shown here, and then if you compared that to the February 2009 forecast, you'd have a 19.8% reduction.
So that's an additional 3.4%.
Right. Sure, that's...
The current situation is already a 16.4% reduction.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
From forecasted spending.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's the current situation.
So that's how that column reads all the way down for each budget area then.
So why wouldn't, just mathematically, why wouldn't it be an additional 7.6% reduction?
Mr. Chair, members, because it's a biennial rather than annual, we're putting the 7.6% here is being applied to fiscal 2011 only, whereas the base is the 2 years.
2 years,
yeah. So mathematically, do people understand, okay? Okay, those are some pretty severe numbers. Okay, continue.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to take you back to the front page then, the second example, and then you can tell me if you want me to walk through each one of them individually.
Well, again, mathematically, so if it's a 3.4 difference, just trying to work through the math here, and you double that, that's 6.8, not 7.6.
3.8.
Mr. Chair, one year of the biennium may be higher than the other year. The percentage is being applied to the second year. The 7.6 is applied to the second year of the biennium only. Excuse me.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, going back to the front page then, the request was for a number of examples. So then if we look at the second example, the second example was essentially to say, what if instead of 100% resolution through permanent spending reductions for the fiscal 10-11 shortfall, the resolution that there was somehow 25% a change that was a one-time in nature from some source, and that it's just just some source, nothing identified, and then 75%
or some revenue.
Permanent.
Yeah, could be revenue, could be.
Yeah, the intent being you just wouldn't do it all through permanent reductions, so what's the impact on structural change? And so then, Mr. Chairman, members, that essentially, as you might imagine, would drop the across-the-board permanent reductions down from 7.6% to 5.7% and would have less of an impact on the structural imbalance, leaving the remaining deficit for fiscal 12 and 13 at $3.6 billion rather than $3 billion in the first example. So what's going to happen in these examples, obviously, as we move forward, is you'll just have a slightly lower percent across the board permanent reductions in fiscal 11, and you would, in effect, need higher reductions in fiscal 12 and 13, higher than the 8.9% I've previously discussed, in order to resolve the fiscal 12 and 13 structural gap. And then the detail is, of course, provided On what would be page 4 in your packet, these pages are front to back. It's labeled in the upper right-hand corner, the 75% example. And you can see there, for example, you know, some of the detail that we've previously talked about in the first example. If you look on line 34 in the center of the page, you can see where the 5.7% reduction has results in lower cumulative change, for example, in K-12 education instead of the 19.8%, it drops to 18.9% and so on and so forth. Again, to point out, you still have the potential for federal maintenance of effort limits. It's certainly and probably in higher education, even in this example here. And that, to Senator Metzen's point earlier, obviously, if you have those limits, then in order to make reductions, that would mean higher reductions in other budget areas, obviously, because you're limited by this federal law in this place. Mr. Chair and members, then the third, I'll walk through the bullet point on the front. The third example, the third third set of bullet points there on the front page is a 50-50% example. So if there was a 50% change in fiscal 2011 in permanent spending pattern, and there was a 50% of budget balance solution that came from some alternate source, at that point you would have permanent reductions to fiscal 2011 of 3.8%. On an across-the-board basis, and you would...
Mine says 25%. That should say 50%.
I'm sorry, that should say 50%. The detail,
corner,
yes,
in the upper right-hand corner.
And that would...
He had just met with the Finance Committee members, and they were going to a 25%.
It's 50.
And that would, of course, Mr. Chair, then change the structural imbalance by $1.2 billion from $5.4 to $4.2 billion.
So what do these three examples assume about the education unallotment, that $1.1 billion?
Mr. Chair,
that only affects the out years.
Mr. Chair,
does it affect both?
It affects the out years. All of these examples essentially start with the assumption as portrayed in the Department of Finance's general fund balance analysis that the unallotment of the K-12 aid payments will result in those payments being repaid in fiscal 2012 of about $1.1 billion. So the $5.4 billion shortfall here for fiscal 12 and 13 includes $1.1 billion of entitlement repayment to the school districts.
That repayment would take place under a new legislature and a new governor, correct? There's no plan here to repay it during the current gubernatorial term or the current legislative term. It would take place after an election.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. My understanding is of the governor's intent is that it's an unallotment and a deferral out to a different time period, to the next biennium.
You know, I've got to do some Christmas shopping. Could I use your credit card?
I think I would have reservations about that.
And then I'm leaving the state.
Until I knew how much you were spending.
And then I'm leaving the state.
You're leaving the state. Yeah. What's your credit limit?
And you can pay it back afterwards. Okay, and then we asked, any questions on these examples? Okay, then we asked... I don't know if the commissioner is still here, but the commissioner and the governor have both suggested publicly that one possibility was just to carry forward the unallotments, and that's the next sheet. Is that the next sheet?
Mr. Chair, members, the bottom, it's summarized on the bottom of the first page. And that basically what this was an attempt to, there had been some discussion about if the unallotments were made permanent, what would that effect be on the next biennium? And it's the next to last sheet in the handout.
It says unallotment?
It says unallotments on it.
Okay.
And the total unallotments, or the total unallotments and administrative actions were $2,676,000,000. To get at a number here, and I have to emphasize, this makes a number of assumptions, and this would not be the correct number, but we think it'd be close. We subtracted out the revenue changes of $211 million, and those were the change in income tax reciprocity with Wisconsin, the capital equipment, and the corporate tax delays, because those were revenue items and they're of a one-time nature anyway, but they're subtracted out, so we have a number of $2,466,000,000. Then we subtracted out the changes in education payments, the delays of $1,170,000,000 and $601 million, which were the two unallotments affecting education aid payments. That gets us down to $695,000,000. And then to attempt to get a one-year number here, a fiscal 11 number that we could carry forward, because the amount carried forward is the fiscal 11 change, we subtracted out the 2010 changes in unallotments. It was local government aid payments of $100 million, DHS changes of $77 million, and then agency operating reductions of $12 million. That gets us to a $507 million number. Emphasize again, it's a very rough number because particularly in the human services area, we wouldn't carry the 2011 number forward. The number would be recalculated for 2012 and 2013. So carrying the 2011 number forward is a very rough number. There are also some aid payment delays in human services that are built into there that were carried forward, so that two would offset each other, but we don't have new forecasted numbers for all these unallotment items in 12 and 13. So it's a very rough number to come up with $507 million, but as summarized on the bottom of the first page, then that would narrow the 2012-13 gap from $5.4 million to $3.2 million. I need to mention also one other item within that is we backed out the repayment of the $1.1 million or billion-dollar education shift or education delay that's assumed to be repaid in fiscal 2012. We backed that out as well to get to that. It would reduce the number or the deficit from $5.4 million to $3.2
billion. Backing it out means you do not assume
not
it's repaid.
Assuming repayment.
Not assuming repayment.
Right. Assuming that the aid payment would stay at a 73-27 schedule.
Is the commissioner still here? I think, Representative Carlson, I think what we should do is send a note to the commissioner with this outline and ask if this is a fair representation of his and the governor's comments about carrying forward the unallotments.
I think we should.
We'll do that, and just for
like
purposes
the,
of seeing.
Left,
yeah, because we just want to find out if that's a fair assessment of what they've said publicly. So we'll do that. Okay, and then the last thing we asked was if you would run a scenario based on what we believe to be the governor's suggestion on a constitutional amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, on the back page, page two, the back of the cover page here, is a summary of the request that you made here. So what we looked at is the governor's proposed constitutional amendment would limit biennial spending to the revenues for the actual revenues for the previous biennium. So what we looked at for this example is that under the current scenario, the November forecast, the revenues for fiscal 2010-11, the current biennium, are projected to be $29.986 billion. So what we did in this example here was to see what percent reduction in spending in 12 and 13 would be needed in order to fit within the $29.986 billion spending level. You can see the bullet points here summarizing the output, in that a reduction would be needed of $8.658 billion from the current projected spending level in 12 and 13 of $38.6 billion. That's roughly a 24% spending reduction in fiscal 12 and 13. And I should note, as has been the case actually in all of these examples, this assumes no reduction to debt service and capital projects, and then the other category in the budget, which is a small amount, but presumably we're unable to make much change in the trajectory of our debt service costs for bond issues that have already been made. And then the other point with this example is that the reductions, the projected deficit for fiscal 12 and 13, of course, is $5.4 billion. So these, under this example, there would be a positive remaining balance of $3.2 billion. So in order to get to the revenue level, you would essentially cut $3.2 billion more out of the budget in fiscal 12 and 13 than what would essentially be needed to balance the budget, and then that would become a positive balance remaining on the bottom line at that point.
So I'm just looking at the 100% sheet and the constitutional amendment sheet. And the bottom line is relatively close, the $30 billion and the $29.9 billion. Is there a mathematical? Because the percent at the top is 8.9% and 23.9%.
One element affecting that, Mr. Chair members, is that the assumption, in effect, of the in the scenario that I just walked through left the fiscal 10-11 deficit off the table. So essentially, it didn't assume, it didn't build in a permanent reduction of $1.2 billion that carried forward. It in effect assumed that that was all resolved through one-time actions and left the remaining $5.4 billion, whereas in the first scenario, part of the reduction in 12 and 13 is the carry forward of a permanent solution of $1.2 billion reductions made this biennium that carry forward. So you do get a cumulative effect shown in the first chart.
So if you did the 100% solution, you would get to a $5 billion reduction, and then you'd only have about $3 billion left under the constitutional amendment.
It wouldn't have to be that low.
Yeah. Is that the way to read that? Is that the way to read that? I'm looking at $5.4 billion reduction under the 100% solution, and then the additional amount would be the difference between 8.6 and 5.4. Which would be $3.2 billion. So the 100% solution gets you to about a little less than, a little more than, is that about 60%?
Mr. Chair, I guess the way I'm thinking about it is that you would, if you have to resolve $5.4 billion in fiscal 12 and 13, If you carry $1.2 billion forward, yes, that resolves $2.4 roughly, which would drop you down to about $3 billion of deficit, would be roughly 40% of the solution would come through your permanent actions in fiscal 10-11. At that point, you would have the additional $3 billion that you would need to resolve in 12 and 13 to get a balanced budget. And I think the situation here is that the current revenues for fiscal 12 and 13 are projected to be about $33 billion. So that's where you have to get to. You would have to get spending down from the current level of $38 billion down to about $33 in order to be in balance. Which leads me to actually question what is going on, frankly, in my fiscal 12 and 13 adjusted spending column that you're seeing here.
Uh-huh.
I'm tempted to think that I should probably go back and look at my
formulas in that column.
Because in order to be balanced, it would only need to be coming down to 33, which it in effect is. The spending change is coming down by 5.4, which is what you need. I think I might just be double counting one of the spending reductions.
Let's look at that.
In that column.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You just said that if you did it 100%, the 1.2, you'd double that, you'd get 2.4 over a biennium. Isn't the $1.2 billion in cuts today worth 1.6 or more per year in the future since we're 5 months in?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, I think it depends what you do.
Yeah.
And when you do them. I mean, some cuts, I mean, most of the dollars in the state budget are in forecasted programs, but most of the appropriations in the budget are direct appropriations that tend to carry forward flat. So if you carry forward, if you reduce direct appropriations, you're going to have effectively usually just this doubling effect. But if you make changes in eligibility levels, benefit levels, other things that tend to be in forecasted programs, per pupil spending amounts in K-12 education, those things may not carry forward flat.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, the model is making the assumption that $1.2 billion is cut in fiscal 11 and then carrying it forward. So, but your point, yes, it could be done in, some
10.
Of it could be done in 10. That would have differing effects on how it would carry forward.
Mr. Chair, because I was thinking of cutting in 10, can you just speculate I look at the benefit of cuts is you resolve a larger portion of the 12-13 deficit. Can you just sort of speculate if you're really trying to cut, let's say cut 100% to get to 1.2, but you want to max out how big of a premium you can get out of that for the years going forward? Can you get to 1.6 a year, 1.7, or 1.8, or 1.5? Or because obviously, if you want to cut, the larger the cut of the right kind of cut, you can dig your way out of that deficit quicker. The next governor would get a premium savings on deficit solution. I'm just being silent on people's philosophy about cutting or not, but it seems to me there's a way to cut if you're going to go through the pain of cutting to get the biggest bang for your cut in dollars, maybe not in human pain, but in dollars on a spreadsheet. Can you guess how far you could take that 1.2? Could you take it instead of 2.4 over the next biennium? Could you take it to $3 billion if you cut really effectively?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lencheski, it's difficult to guess, and in order to make that occur, the cuts would have to occur in not in grants, not in things where you were cutting a million in 2011 and that carried forward as a million. They would have to carry forward in programs where you're essentially cutting eligibility, and those are fast-growing programs. So that if you had a program that cost a million in fiscal 11 and it cost 1.2 or 1.3 million in 2012 and perhaps closer to $2 million in 2013. it would have to target those kind of programs in order to make it grow that fast. And I'm not able to identify what those might be at this point or what the number might become.
If I may, just a final follow-up then. I think MMB, do they not provide us every year with the fastest growing expenditures in the whole budget, and we see them? So we could actually try to select those if we wanted to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanchesky, they're required to provide that report every 2 years, and I believe the last one was in January. So it's, okay. Yes, it is available in January 2009.
Thank you.
Now, what's back to a previous discussion, there's no, that other 25%, let's say you do a 75-25, that could, these percents assume the tax committee takes, okay, it takes the same 7.6% or 5.7. Okay, sure. So that's already in. But theoretically, you could do something else on tax expenditures or something that could get a bigger number, theoretically. It seems like we should be, I'm asking, Madam Chair, it seems like we should be looking at tax expenditures right now, too. It looks like we're going to have to do some stuff there.
I agree.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, these are all very devastating numbers we're looking at. And one thing I look to my right at Representative Huntley, and I'm thinking about the health delivery part of this equation with the baby boomers and then the growth and the need coming forward or going forward. Again, they're all tough areas, but good luck. It's more of a statement than anything, but I think you've got your 60-year-old population and older, obviously needing that those services going forward at a huge amount. So just a comment more than anything.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley.
If I could just respond. I just came back from a meeting on health care, and there was a very famous author there who wrote an article, and he's a geriatrician, he wrote an article and said, what do we do with dad? He's getting a lot of attention nationally.
With dad?
With dad, yeah. His father got Alzheimer's.
I think, Mr. Mossman and Mr. Marks, that last sheet on the Constitution, I think it would be more, first check out the math on that last column. That seems like it could be a challenge, but also I'm wondering if we shouldn't build a 100% solution into the middle part and then show the last column as what would have to be done additional. That might be a better representation. I don't think the proponents of that constitutional amendment would argue we should do nothing in the next year. Senator Senjum?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, would you repeat that?
I'm trying to get on this last constitutional amendment sheet here. I'm trying to get a better representation about what that might look like. And I think it would be fair to say that proponents of the constitutional amendment would not say, let's not do anything in 10 and 11. They would say, let's balance that budget in 10 and 11 and then proceed from there. So I think maybe a better way to represent this would be assume the 100% solution. Yeah. And then run the out columns and see what that would look like.
That would be good.
Does that be good to that see. Thinks yeah. that makes more sense? Because it looks like you got to do an additional $3 billion on top of the 100% solution, roughly.
Mr. Chair, I can easily do that, and I'm pretty sure as I'm looking at these that what's going on is it's that when there is a change in fiscal 11, that this column here that we've been looking at is just effectively double counting the fiscal 11 reduction, because if you were to add the $2.4 billion onto this 100% example, you would get back to the 33.3 essentially of what the revenue level is.
So I think.
So I don't think, Mr. Chairman, that it actually changes the reductions that you're seeing before that. It's just not summing into this last column correctly, but I'll clean that up.
Okay. And I'm thinking that the 23.9 is not a correct number. Are you saying you do think that's still correct?
No, Mr. Chair. With the clarification you're asking for, the 23.9 will be lower if you were to make a $1.2 billion permanent reduction.
Right.
It would most certainly be a smaller reduction that would remain to be that would occur.
And I think we should. I think we should. That sheet I don't think is a good characterization of the amendment right now. And I think we need to. So nobody should run around and use that sheet. These are all drafts, by the way.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So why don't we make some adjustments there and take another look at that and see what that could look like. So, okay, I think that's we're pretty much done for today, Representative
Just
Carlson.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. Would it be difficult to add in, assuming early action, and I know that early action meaning when we convene, because we're going to have hearings hopefully in January, and we're going to try to get the governor's budget as soon as possible.
Some 10 cuts you're suggesting.
You know, what that additional 3 or 4 months would make on these numbers with reductions. I know it's complicated because you're not giving school districts and agencies quite as much lead time as you would when you would. But it might be helpful.
Mr. Chairman,
what if we just assumed we sped everything up 4 months and see how big that number can get? Or not 4 months, whatever that number is. Whatever.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, we can do that model, but then the cuts that carry, if for example, you had $400 million of cuts in fiscal 10 and $800 million of cuts in fiscal 11, the base for 12 and 13 is carried forward at $800 million rather than the $1.2 billion that's in here. So it would require then bigger cuts in 12 and 13. But it will complicate the model to try and build that in.
We could do something like that to the model, but I would reinforce Bill's comments. It actually might work. I'm not sure, but it actually might work the opposite of the way you're thinking about it, that it would smooth the reductions this biennium by starting them earlier, but you would have a lower base reduction in fiscal 11 as a result.
So you would actually get
less of an impact in fiscal 12 and 13 by those changes alone.
Well, I think maybe that's answering the question that I was posing then.
Well, another way to think about it, though, is if you were able to make the 1.2 in 11, take that, and then speed it up 4 months, you could maybe bring the – that doesn't help you with your 12 and 13.
No.
That leaves you with a balance.
You want to cut in 10.
And, Mr. Chair, it all depends on – you know, you have obviously an array of choices you could – you could change the trajectory of spending. I mean, you could achieve greater reductions in 12 and 13 through other means just by making 11 cuts and then also doing things to further change the trajectory going forward after that.
The fear would be is that we would, by speeding up the cuts, we would be avoiding the hard work for the out years by not cutting as deep in 11, theoretically. That's the point. Okay.
Going with a higher base.
I
didn't think of that. That's why we have good fiscal analysts. Did you want to announce the next meeting?
Senator Senjum, anything? Okay, we are planning another meeting early January. The one item that we for certain are going to do in early January is there's been a series of newspaper articles and television programs where there have been suggestions for reinvention and other other good ideas for what we should be doing here. And so our intent is to bring in some of those players, Chamber of Commerce, Taxpayers League, others, to ask their advice on some of that. It's one thing, I mean, we're open to that. There was, I think, the Star and Tribune two weekends ago had a series of 6 or 8 budget experts or outside experts who had some suggestions, and I think what we'd like to do is bring some of them in and ask them to tell us what are those things for reinvention or that they think would be something that should be considered now. So that'll be for sure one of the things we'll do. I think you should assume that the finance committees in the House and the Senate are working behind the scenes at this moment and will be publicly meeting in January, and the sooner we get the budget's governor's recommendations, he has clarified today that he is going to send, Commissioner Hansen said they are going to send a supplemental budget in writing with bills. That's a good thing.
And
so
right.
The sooner the better. And I think I'll just speak for myself. I absolutely want to work jointly. In the governor's letter, he says develop a joint resolution or joint solution to deficit. Absolutely, the Senate is interested in doing that. We view his recommendations as a first step, but a necessary first step, because it's hard to get the legislative committees going until the governor does that.
Mr. Chairman, I would concur with that. The House does want to work with the administration as well, but the reason we were sending that letter and making that point is that we do want the governor to make the first step with his recommendations and a bill.
It tends to make the system work better.
That's right.
So, anything else? Nope. Thank you, and we'll do that sometime early. We're looking at January 13th apparently is the tentative date, 9:30 a.m., January 13th, at this very location.
So the only thing this will change.
Have a great holidays.
Do it. Meeting adjourned.